Welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and joining me today is Nick English. How you doing, Nick?
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad, not bad at all. And Mohammed Butt is here as well. How you doing, Mo?
Always glad to be back in the podcast room, Greg.
It's always good to have you in the podcast room. But before we turn our attention to the return of club football, because it has been International Week, obviously, we're just going to talk about the last few bits of international football that have been going on, specifically around the home nations. As you might have heard, Northern Ireland will now finish at least second in their group. They are behind Germany, so it seems like they're just going to finish second. After beating Czech Republic 2-0, huge, huge achievement for Michael O'Neill and his squad. I mean, everyone thought their peak was qualifying for Euro 2016. Clearly not. They're carrying on. They're building from what they built in the last tournament as well. Very great achievement there. Wales, meanwhile, overtook Republic of Ireland in their group standings, thanks to Ben Woodburn again. He obviously scored the winner against Austria. He set up Hal Robson-Kanu to score the opener in a 2-0 win against Moldova in Moldova, while Ireland lost to Serbia. So a bit of a change of the guard in that group. Meanwhile, Scotland had probably left it a bit too late, but their late surge continued with a 2-0 win over Malta to keep their Finn hopes of qualifying for Russia alive. Meanwhile, England put in a better performance to win by a smaller margin against Malta, against Slovakia at home, a 2-1 win at Wembley, and Rashford from zero to hero after England got showed up in the first 50 minutes. I don't think I saw them control the ball correctly for the first 50 minutes. It was absolutely dreadful. But yeah, Rashford, hero of the hour, wasn't he, really?
Well, yeah, it was kind of a Lilian Thuram in World Cup 98 semi-finals, you know, and he made a mistake for the goal. I mean, they overplayed how much it was his fault, but he made a mistake for the goal.
It definitely was at least partly his fault.
Yeah, no, it definitely was, but I mean, they're talking like he passed the ball, you know, to the goal scorer.
It was just a stupid, naive thing that a youngster does.
He made a mistake, but and then he made up for it. It was a good assist. It wasn't like a mind bending one like his one in the previous game. It was a good corner, and then the goal just really took that nicely composed shot. So you know, he gave it up, and then he made up for it. You know,
we're going to come on to Rashford a little bit later on. But just on the point of England, Southgate's come for a bit of stick the last few weeks. They probably put in a better performance, even though they got outplayed horrendously in the first 50 minutes. But is Southgate on a bit of a fool's errand, Nick? In that he's trying to get England playing with this possession football in line with this England DNA project, in line with the youth teams that he did so well with. They actually looked more comfortable in the second half when the game kind of started to break up and chaos kind of reigned, and they could use their kind of physicality and moments of individual technique rather than controlling the pace of the game to actually beat Slovakia.
Yeah, which is kind of what everyone's been saying for about 20 years, is that's how England should play. Just try and make games as chaotic as possible rather than trying to follow the model of Spain or France or Germany, because they haven't got the players suited to the task, which is very important. Now, England, both games started very, very slowly this international break, but started to pick up towards the end. Playing a team like Malta is always going to be tricky because they defend so deep. But Slovakia are no slouchers, especially when Hamzik's playing as well as he is. And they've got some really tidy players. But in the second half, England looked really good, actually. Yeah. They were pressing very well. There was one moment where Slovakia played about 7 one-touch passes just to get themselves out of trouble, and it turned into a great chance. But that was great play from them. You know, England did everything they could. Fool's errand to try and play possession football a bit, but I don't necessarily think he's doing that. I'd be more worried about the slow starts if I was Southgate.
Rashford wasn't the only one have a bit of a contentious game, although in a very different way. Dele Alli didn't exactly perform to the standard we know he can, and he also pulled out a middle finger salute, he says, to Kyle Walker. But this is a bit of a fuss over nothing, just a young lad maybe making a silly gesture to a teammate. Obviously, in the island, the referee, which some people have read as being an offensive gesture to the official. What do we think about it?
It's very Dele Alli, isn't it? He's a bit of a needly player. He's got a bit of that edge to him. It is essentially much ado about nothing. I think people are making a big deal of that it needs to be, but he does need to grow up. He responds to adversity with too much immaturity.
Is it another sign of frustration getting the better of him, do you think?
Maybe. The thing about Dele Alli is that he was crap against Slovakia, let's face it. And he still produced 2 or 3 really, really good moments, which could have led to goals. That's the kind of player that he is.
Do you think England know how to use him properly?
I think so. I think him behind Kane works brilliantly. Just do what they're doing at Spurs.
But it didn't seem to be the same as at Spurs, because so often the play was kind of, you know...
Yeah, I think in the first half, the mistake they made was Southgate tried to put Rashford on the right and Oxlade-Chamberlain on the left, and that was a disaster. Rashford really picked up when he started playing on the left again. I think Alli behind Kane, just keep playing that.
I understand that, but what I was trying to say is that when you look at Spurs, you've got someone like Eriksen to hold the ball back a bit, and he kind of plays ahead of the play, so he's in the final third free. England, it seemed like they were kind of giving him the ball, being like, oh, do you want to make something happen? And he was like, I'm not a playmaker. This isn't what I do.
I think that's the role that Sterling provides when he plays. I think Rashford and Sterling around Kane and Ali works really well. You've got a bit of everything there. Really young front line as well. Lots of goals.
And there's another bit of a story in international football this break as well. Quite a nice kind of heroic story from the Asian qualifying period, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, nobody expected to happen, but the Syrian national team somehow have made it to a qualifying playoff. They were playing Iran, who hadn't conceded a single goal during all of their qualifying. And they needed to, if they won, they qualified. They went 1-0 up within the first, I think, 13 minutes. Then Iran pulled it back to 2-1. And then they got a 93rd minute equaliser.
Absolute scenes.
Unbelievable scenes. The team went absolutely bonkers. Coach went absolutely bonkers. I mean, when you think about the context of that goal, given what's going on over there,
they're playing their home games in Malaysia. It's
an astonishing situation. The only bad luck that they've got is that somehow Australia only beat Thailand 2-1. So they're now facing Australia in their playoff game, and even if they win that, they still have to play
South American team.
I think it's an African team, in a fifth qualifying round. So still a long way for them to go, but already incredible achievement.
Absolutely. Just to go on to some other things that have been happening this week while we wait for club football to return. A bit more fallout from deadline day. You might have been hearing some of this happening. So to kind of round it up, West Ham's co-owners have been called the Dildo Brothers by the owner of Sporting Club de Portugal. Very interesting. There's legal matters going between them. Yeah, confusion over Barcelona's intent regarding the signing of Jean-Michel Seri. We're still not sure whether it's the technical staff or the social media
team. Massively.
And Coutinho, they claim that Liverpool offered him up to them at the last minute for €400 million, which seems unlikely given the English window was closed. And there's also encouragement for UEFA to go against the PSG and Man City for FFP rulings, which might also produce some legal matters. So one to watch out for people that don't want to watch football on the pitch. And Alexis Sanchez was apparently convinced he was off to City, which obviously didn't happen because Thomas Lamar didn't go to Arsenal. What do you make of all this post-window mudslinging? And is it just, you know, football hasn't happened? The club football calendar hasn't unfrozen itself from international football. People bored, trying to get the stories out because there's nothing else going on, is there really?
It's very unbecoming of a sport which has already had its reputation trashed for the past 15 years.
It's going more like WWE now, isn't it?
I think a lot of what you said there basically comes down to the fact that Barcelona horrendously run the Seri stuff, the Coutinho stuff, even the Neymar stuff. I mean,
trying to claim they're a better club without Neymar is one of the...
I mean, you know...
More than a fraud.
I mean, it just...
In common football parlance.
This Barcelona board are absolutely shocked. And you know, if you like football at all, you can only hope that Agusti Benedetto's whatever our confidence goes through.
But we're going to get onto that as well a little bit later on. But first, the Premier League. It's back. It's bigger than ever. I don't know if it is bigger than ever, but that sounds good. But the big match this weekend could actually be an absolute doozy to watch. Manchester City versus Liverpool at the Etihad. No manager has beaten Pep Guardiola more times in his career than Jurgen Klopp. 5 times out of 10 games they've played against you in competitive action so far. We've seen how Liverpool's football can chew up opponents who want to dominate the games and kind of take control of the possession. Yep. Will the visitors hold the advantage on this one, Mo?
So much depends on the first 20 minutes of each half. I think Liverpool will come out flying and press Guardiola's team high if City can maintain their composure under that pressure. And remember, City's one big problem is they've not shown they can maintain composure under pressure. If they can do it, I mean, that was always the strength of Pep's Barca team and his Bayern team. They could withstand it. City can't do it yet. If they can withstand the pressure, they'll win the game because they'll outplay City in midfield. They'll have the beating at the back with Gabriel Jesus and Bernardo Silva, David Silva, Kevin De Bruyne. But it all depends on that 50 minutes because Liverpool could absolutely run roughshod over them.
Really quickly as well.
That's what I'm saying. They'll come flying out the blocks, pressing high. Klopp, like you said, he knows exactly how to beat Pep. If City buckle under that pressure, I mean, they're going to need a big 20 minutes from company at the start of each half because if they buckle under that pressure, they will not win this game.
Yeah, there's always the fact that you've got to remember that Jurgen Klopp seems to be very, very good at playing the underdog in these sort of games. Yeah, he's happy for his sides not to have the ball, to basically ask the same question a million times, can you not make a mistake? Basically, if you don't make a mistake against Klopp's sides, you can get away from that first 20-minute period, as Mo mentioned, which is super, super crucial. And then the onus is on, well, if you don't make a mistake, then Liverpool have to get the ball and they have to win it. That's what Chelsea did so effectively against Liverpool last season, is Conte's side didn't make a mistake, so they came, you know, they made it really hard for them. But it's... it's one of those games, which is one thing I was looking at, which is quite weird, is both teams are fifth and sixth for chance creation in the league. They're both behind Southampton, which is not really what you'd expect for both these teams. They're not creating that many clear-cut chances despite pouring men forward relentlessly.
We say clear-cut chances for big chances, which is kind of Opta's version of clear-cut chances. Yeah. Liverpool actually top with 12. City 7, which I think makes them fourth. So even though the quantity might not be there, the quality kind of is.
Yeah, Liverpool, I mean, with the way they play, with their attacking, a great attacking trio, I mean, you know, they're bound to create great chances, really. And yeah, it doesn't surprise me that they're top.
Absolutely, but that's kind of Liverpool's approach, we all know very well. Pep Guardiola, we know what his kind of brand of football is, but as we've seen, especially Bayern Munich, he can shift it around in however many million formations you want to go with. And he's done a little bit of that with City so far. So, Mo, what approach should we expect from Pep? How is he going to kind of get around this problem? Is it time to unleash Walker and Mendy at last? Because Walker's now unsuspended for this game and Mendy's hopefully going to be fit enough. Or should we expect something a bit more Guardiola-esque and unexpected and a bit unorthodox?
I mean, I think the temptation to go back three is very... I mean, it must be there, but that against Liverpool...
One-on-one against the best
I was
going to
say,
against.
I mean, yeah, he tried it against Barcelona way back in 2015 because he had an injury crisis. Doing that against Liverpool's defence is suicide. I think it will be a 4-4-3-3 classic Guardiola stuff. It will require a big game. I don't think actually it will be too unorthodox. I think maybe at the most what he'll do is put Bernardo Silva in one of the wing positions to help get a bit of control in the middle of the park. I don't think it will be too unorthodox. He might go 3-4-2-1 in second half if they're to chase the game, but I think he'll start 4-3-3, standard stuff really. And yes, unleashing Walker and Mendy, playing high, punishing the space behind Liverpool's fullbacks.
Because that probably is one of their weaker points at the moment, Liverpool, the fullbacks. Klein's injured, although Trent Alexander-Armstrong is an interesting talent. Left back with something short's going on there, really.
Trent Alexander-Armstrong.
What did I say? Sorry, that's what I said. Yeah. Trent Alexander-Arnold. I keep saying Armstrong. This is terrible.
That was a pointless mistake.
I think it is a pointless mistake, absolutely. But speaking of another weaker area of Klopp's side, it kind of runs hot and cold, but what midfield should Klopp be opting for in this game? And bring back Big Phil straight away. He's looked great for Brazil.
I mean... In terms of on the pitch, well, what they've got at the moment is working really well. Emre Can's, he's one of those players who blows seriously hot and cold. He's blowing seriously hot at the moment.
he's like a hairdryer, but not the Fergie kind.
Yeah, Wijnaldum is probably the one who's most at risk out of that. But Henderson...
And yet he was fantastic against Arsenal.
Yeah, he was really, really good in that game. So it's kind of a difficult decision. They might want to bring him off the bench in case they need an impact sub. I don't think a punishment for Coutinho is out of the question, you know. Let him watch a bit of football as opposed to just letting him waltz back in. I'd start the same midfield because it's working, but having an option like Coutinho on the bench isn't a bad thing.
But obviously the main kind of the blockbuster stuff for both sides is in the attack. We've had a question through from Mr. Walker Porter who asks, would you ever have a front three of Mane, Salah and Firmino, or Jesus, Aguero or Sterling? Well, Sterling's not available, so, you know...
Easily I'd have Liverpool's front three because if you put an Aguero in there, absolutely. There's no way I'd take Aguero in any sort of front three.
Would you take Aguero in any team ever?
In a front two, playing off a big number nine. Look, man, you look at the success playing with Diego Forlan, playing with Edin Dzeko, even Alvaro Negredo. Sergio Aguero is a killer. He's brilliant. But if he's not playing off a big number nine, he's, I mean, not useless, but he's not very good.
Do you agree with that, Nick?
I wouldn't agree with the shocking treatment of Premier League legend Sergio Aguero, but I would go right now Mane, Salah and Firmino. Excellent. I don't think Salah is even playing that well, but Firmino and Mane are just on fire.
Such a blend of skill sets.
Yeah, the pace of the movement, it's absolutely extraordinary. Which brings on to our last question on this match from Manuib Farouk, who asks, will the team that defends best win? Both teams have enough quality going forward, plus the pace. But can either team defend well enough under pressure to be better than the other at defending?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. You nailed the game. I think it's not so much who'll defend better, it's who will avoid the mistakes. Because these are two teams that are set up to punish mistakes so effectively. When you've got players like Jesus, like Aguero, like De Bruyne, they can
Silva as well.
Yeah, Silva. Yeah. They can turn a...
There's a gap. Oh, we found it.
Exactly. They can turn one bad forward pass into a goal in a matter of
seconds. That's what David Silva did against Bournemouth for Gabriel Jesus. A beautiful split the atom pass. You know, Jesus took it on it.
And
scored.
He went nuclear.
He went nuclear. No, I think Pep seems to defend with the ball. So I think absolutely what Nick was saying is who can avoid them, who can defend better. Yeah, that's what's going to decide the game.
And Liverpool love to play teams that want the ball.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if Pep, as Nick said, if City can avoid the mistakes, and if especially under those first 20 minutes, as I said, they can win this game. If they can't, they're in big trouble.
Well, I think it's going to be absolutely sensational game, so do tune in if you can. Next to Everton versus Tottenham Hotspur. Everton exposed, I think it's fair to say, by Chelsea, at least the gap between what they thought they had and what they actually have at Stamford Bridge. Yeah. They didn't really seem to be able to rattle the champions without that big centre-forward to occupy at least one or two defenders. Will they have the same look against Spurs? Because they're now missing Wanyama. So maybe Everton will have a bit more joy in midfield, less need to bring their forwards back to help out with the possession.
Yeah, but at the same time, they don't have anything that can rattle. I mean, Spurs have the best centre-backs in the league, so they're still going to run into that brick wall, Everton. They haven't signed a striker. Wayne Rooney could always just go...
Well, he's going to play, according to Ronald Koeman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, he's had such a troubling international break, you know. I mean, it seems, you know, without the international football to distract him, but... Yeah, if he turns it on, I mean, you know, he could still give them a decent game. They need someone to do that. I think the midfield battle, okay, Wanyama's not going to be there, but Everton will press so high. Spurs will press so high and heavy anyway. It won't make that much of a difference, I don't think. I mean, I suppose if Dembele has a stinker, but ultimately, Spurs aren't playing at Wembley, so I would and it's not August anymore, so I would expect Harry Kane will probably bag one of those chances he gets created. Eriksen was brilliant in the international break.
Yeah, he was.
Really good form.
Hat-trick of assists.
Really good form. I think he'll bring that into this game. He'll feed the ball for Kane. Kane will score now. I think Everton will be in a bit of a spanking here, I think.
Eric Dier is probably going to move into midfield to cover for Wanyama, yeah. We can probably guess. Llorente probably won't be able to feature because he's still going back from fitness. Still coming back to fitness from injury. But should we expect anything from Davinson Sanchez on this one? If Eric Dier is going to be needed in midfield, maybe they need to bring their new man at the back to do something. We saw an international week, he actually cleaned out Dani Alves. So yeah. Clearly ready for the challenge.
I think it's a good game to actually play him because, I mean, Everton have had the second lowest number of shots on target in the league so far. I know we're only three games in, but for a team that spent so much on attacking talent, you know, you kind of expect that. And they've only scored two goals and both of them, you know, were Wayne Rooney. So obviously that attack hasn't clicked yet. So it's a good game to bring someone like Davinson Sanchez in next to Alderweireld and Vertonghen, who just looks just imperious at the moment. I agree with Mo. I think Everton could be in for a bit of an old school spanking here.
Will they need Serge Aurier on the pitch to do that though, Spurs? Because, I mean, their right side is looking a bit weak without the kind of Walker effect.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, it could be a good, you know, putting in maybe two new debutants on the same game might be a bit risky.
Maybe off the bench is what I was kind of going for.
Yeah, potentially. But I just think Spurs are going to cruise this game. I just can't see they're flowing really well already. They're not getting the results, but they're flowing. So
I think my fear would be with someone like Trippier slinging the crosses. You look at Ashley Williams, you look at Michael Keane, that's the kind of service they would love to gobble up.
Yeah, so I don't think they get any joy with Trippier crosses. I think they'd have to keep it on the deck, you know, and maybe they could catch them out with a back press Eriksen cross, but otherwise, yeah, no, keep it on the deck, move it around. Everton won't be able to cope.
Another side that might have to keep it on the deck to make the most of facing their hosts is Chelsea, who travelled to play Leicester City this weekend. Leicester City have obviously got the man mountain himself, Harry Maguire, so one to watch out for there.
They're full of man mountains, man. Wes Morgan,
absolutely, yeah. Morata's been very good in the air so far. It'll be really interesting to see how he does against those guys. But Leicester are on a nice little run before they face Man United. They obviously got spanked by them, but it was a more even game than maybe the scoreline would suggest.
Yeah, I would say so.
Will Chelsea take similar joy from facing the Foxes, especially after selling Danny Drinkwater to Chelsea? Will we see anything of the midfielder himself, maybe?
Potentially.
On his return to the...
potentially, I mean... I really don't... Like, I know there's... Like, we're going to talk about Adrian Silva thing, but they sold Kante last year, right? And kept Drinkwater, and now they've sold Drinkwater. And so it's like, well, does that formation work now that you've sold Drinkwater as well? Like, I think, does Shakespeare have to change it up in terms of formation? Does he have the personnel to play the same midfield?
We've been playing, I think, Matty James and Wilfred Ndidi in the middle. So
Wilfred Ndidi is a reasonable facsimile of N'Golo Kante. He's not as good, obviously, but you know, Matty James is not Danny Drinkwater. And that's a problem. Like Nick says, how do they get the ball from back to front so quickly now?
Yeah, exactly.
A lot now falls on Riyad Mahrez to carry the ball up the field for them. And he can do it, but. You know,
they're a dimension short of the more multidimensional attacking.
Yeah, to simplify the problem, how do they get to the final third? I don't see how Leicester get into the final third now, unless they play Andy King in the hole, who's surprisingly decent. But I don't see how it works. I was really surprised when they sold
Harry Maguire.
I'll
tell you what though,
Howitzer Maguire.
I'm a big fan of Danny Drinkwater taking the number six at Chelsea, joining the long line of creative midfielders who have taken the number six to honour Xavi. I like it. It's very good.
Oh yeah, of course. That's definitely why he did it. Leicester are still arguing with FIFA about bringing in Adrian Silva. I was going to ask, do they have enough in midfield without him? We've kind of answered that. I don't think they do, but they hopefully they bring him in because he's quite an interesting player, bit of a box to box kind
of. It'd be a nice dimension, but I don't think. I mean, he'd be good. He'd be better than what they have, but I don't think he adds the creative oomph that Drinkwater has. No. I still want to see like how they're going to adapt without having Drinkwater now.
Well, maybe we'll see, because obviously Champions League returns very, very soon. Yeah. So maybe they need to start shuffling their pack.
I think Drinkwater will definitely start today. I think he's fit. Obviously,
Nick, you're grimacing.
I'm good.
I think Drinkwater will start because they've got the Champions League in midweek, and I think he'll want to rest Bakayoko and Kante, or at least one of them for that. And you know, you don't want to wear out your player. I mean, you know, Conte's obviously got a poor record in Europe. They want to make a good impression in the Champions League. I think it would behoove them to focus on that a little bit. You know, I mean, they've got the depth now. Use it.
Well, Eden Hazard could make his return this weekend, but there's a little bit of uncertainty. They might wait until the Champions League to bring him in because basically Conte wants to manage him, because clearly you don't want to rush the guy to fitness because they'll need him second half of the season. Quick question from Matt Brownie-Cake on the whole Silva thing. Do you think Leicester should win their appeal to have their signing be allowed to play before January, or will it set a poor precedent?
It will set a poor precedent unless the Premier League rules on the fact that because they had a notable outgoing, they should be allowed to bring an incoming. I still think, like, you know, for example, they've still got that rule about emergency loans.
Yeah.
I think it should fall under that category personally. It's like, look, we sold a player. The medical was delayed because Ross Barkley was ordering an Uber on the treadmill. Mm-hmm. So we should be allowed to bring this player in.
Also, 14 seconds. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Come on.
Anyway.
Yeah, fair. I wouldn't disagree with any of that, really. We're going to move on now to Arsenal versus Bournemouth. Oz Kataji asks, let's be frank, we all want to hear about Arsenal in crisis. They're in crisis, always in crisis. Just record an hour's worth of Arsenal fans in distress. Now, I mean, we could do that, but we're not going to do that. We are going to, you know, we don't want to go over too much you know, ground that's already been covered extensively elsewhere and in this room. So instead, we're going to ask, aren't Bournemouth also in a bit of a crisis at the moment? They're not in any great shakes. They're not looking too good. They had that wonder goal against City, but otherwise didn't quite go too well to them. If Arsenal don't win, though, I think this will be their worst start to a season in 35 years or something. So it's not exactly great. Average of 3.5 goals per game in the Premier League between these two sides, though. Most of them scored by Arsenal. Should it at least be an exciting shambles to watch, Nick?
Probably. the thing is, I can imagine Arsenal defending shambolically again. Mm. Bournemouth getting loads of chances, but not having the proper cutting edge to finish them. So
just dissing Jermaine Defoe like that.
Yeah, well, you know, you can see the ex-Spurs man bagging a couple of goals. Yeah. But I mean, if Arsenal don't win this game, then it's, you know, all the PR work that Arsene Wenger and the board have put in over the international break is just completely gone to waste. And again, more proof that even though he's got a talented squad, Wenger can't get a good performance out of this group of players.
This is a 5-2 to Arsenal, surely. This is a comfortable win.
Well, I mean, if it is, that all those goals have got to come from or through Mesut Ozil, haven't they? After the week he's had putting out this post, you know, pushing against his
critics. He was unbelievable for Germany.
He was. And maybe it shows if you put Lacazette ahead of him, like all the fans are wanting to see. If you stick that pace in front of him, surely they should be able to slay Bournemouth 5, 6, 7.
Put pace ahead of him, put movement around him. Look, man, he can look disinterested a lot of times. I know, and he doesn't really put in a defensive
effort.
Wouldn't
you if you played for Arsenal? Honestly, I'm joking, Arsenal fans.
Honestly, he's such a good playmaker still. Just put the play.
Put him in the midfield three, for God's sake.
Exactly. Yeah. Put the movement around him, put the pace ahead of him, and just give him the ball and let him do something. Play in transition. You know, play to his strengths. Like, Alexis Sanchez is going to sulk all season. Play to the guy who actually wants to stay. Play to his strengths.
If you do want to hear more on why Mesut Ozil isn't the Antichrist, please do tune in to Defending in Numbers. The latest one, episode 4, went live on Thursday morning. It's got a lot about Mesut Ozil and why he's doing better than you think and being let down maybe by his team and his manager. But anyway, I'll leave it up to the guys to cover in the Deezer Originals pod. We've produced for Deezer. Surprise, surprise. Defending Numbers, find it on iTunes, Audio Boom, Deezer, and everywhere else. But anyway, back onto the Squawker Talker podcast. We're just going to quickly zoom through the rest of the Premier League fixtures this weekend. Manchester United travelled to face Stoke City to try and build on their early gains as the team to beat this season top of the league. Mourinho clearly confident about his chances given the access he has given to Oliver Kay of the Times. If you remember last time he was this open with the press, he gave an interview to Gary Neville and won the title with Chelsea. So good news, United. Mourinho looks very confident and open, which is always a good sign for his teams. Southampton face Watford, two resourceful managers with a talented bunch of players each. I think this could also be quite an interesting game to watch. Don't know about you guys.
Yeah, and I think so. Saints are still in that creative mode where they create chances and they're good going forward. They just don't have a striker to score. And I mean,
well, they do. They just don't score now.
No, this is the thing. Gabbiadini was never the guy. He's a scorer of great goals, not a great goal scorer. They needed someone that can just bang them in.
Just a quick one on United. It's definitely got that second season feeling about Mourinho.
Yeah.
And Lukaku's got 9 goals in 9 games in all competitions this season. He's going to score 30 this season.
Second most bought shirt in the UK, apparently, after Paul Pogba. So they're winning on that one as well.
Finally.
There we are. I think Rashford's 5, so they really are.
That's impressive for a player who doesn't play regularly, doesn't have a number 1 to 11 shirt. Number 5, not bad.
Brighton host West Brom, and I think it's fair to say, could be
pulverised.
By Tony Pulis' team that now look equipped to enter Europe. And I know, Nick, you're a big fan of their summer business.
Mate, yeah. Gregor Kuchariak, oh my God.
But yeah. Who got to, apparently, Slaven Bilic turned down at West Ham when he couldn't get William Carvalho.
Yeah, well, the less said about West Ham's transfer business, the better. But I don't know if they'll get pulverised, but I don't see how Brighton are going to score.
That's, no, that's the problem.
That's the main problem there.
This has got 2-0 all over it. One goal early, one goal late.
Speaking of pulverisation, on Sunday, Burnley take on Crystal Palace as Frank de Boer meets a manager who could be his nemesis in Sean Dyche. who will, let's be honest, Sean Dyche is going to relish facing a team who wants to dominate possession and play good, nice, pretty football without necessarily having the organisation or understanding to quite pull it off. Although, obviously, Mamadou Sakho is now going to be in defence.
Chris Wood hat-trick. Palace.
I interviewed a Palace fan earlier for a role with our social team, and I asked him what he thought was going to happen this weekend, and he just said, "We're going to get diced."
Sliced and diced.
Sliced and diced.
We might have just found the headline for the pod on that one. anyway, also on Sunday, Swansea host Newcastle United for a game that could see Renato Sanchez get
What a ridiculous
sentence. It's very Football Manager, isn't it? Exactly the sort of coup of a signing that Benitez and Newcastle fans surely thought they were going to get this summer, Mo.
I mean, they got Mikel Merino, which is his own sort of coup.
You cannot compare Mikel Merino to Renato Sanchez.
It's his own sort of coup, Greg, I said. Own sort of coup. But no, this is
a very Geordie coup.
It's exactly what Swansea brought in Paul Clement as well, because he's used the fact that he's bezzy mates with Carlo Ancelotti.
"Oh, I was speaking to Carl Heinz, actually. It wasn't even Carlo."
Carlo. It's like, whatever, mate.
Paul is
your old boss.
He's so well connected, and it's just he's used that to his advantage. And Renato Sanchez, I mean, this could be perfect for him. It's a Premier League club. It's a good club. Roque Mesa is, I mean, the dream midfield partner.
You've spoken in the past about the Jonathan Vieira Roque Mesa combination. Yeah, Las Palmas. Could Sanchez kind of benefit from that?
It would be so interesting, because everyone else so far has played him deeper, but you know, you look at what he can actually do with the ball, he carries it, the way he drives team
before he did for Portugal.
I think you want to play him a bit more further forward, you know, see if he can get some end product in there, goals and assists. I think it'd be very interesting to see Roque Mesa hold him midfield, literally hold him, you know,
we know
in
the pivot,
the pivot, moving the ball down, Busquets style, you know, pushing Renato Sanchez further up the field. And Swansea have got a lot of players like Slam Kluklas, you know, holding midfielders, guys who can do the grunt work. Let Sanchez get on with
it. Unleash him.
Kind of be like Jeffrey Sigurdsson. I mean, you know.
Just a final point on Renato Sanchez. Sorry. The fact that, talking about Paul Clement's connections, this sets a precedent as well. So given his ex-Real Madrid connections and the sort of setup they've got over there, it sets a precedent for, hey, have these massive clubs, do you need to loan out a young player who's amazingly talented? Come to Swansea.
Yeah, that's true. Mm.
Marcus Asensio, do you fancy a bit
Marcus Llorente, maybe. Maybe. Start with Llorente or Kovacic.
Marcus Llorente could be very good.
Imagine a midfield of Sanchez and Kovacic. Oh, I want to see that. But we don't have time for that. We've got to move on to Monday night. And we're going to touch on this a bit more probably next week. But anyway, Monday night sees West Ham face Huddersfield. Probably the most impressive overachievers of the season so far in Huddersfield against the biggest wasters. And I mean that in many senses of the phrase. what happens if the Terriers win, Nick?
Bilic is gone.
Is that if... Or is that anyway?
But if Huddersfield win, Bilic has to go. There's no two ways about it.
It's the first home game of the season, isn't it?
You're losing. That's basically how you get exposed as a coach.
That is a good point, though. This is their first home game of the season because they've basically been doing athletics there instead.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, you've got your first home game of the season, all the hype is about it, London Stadium, here we
and
go again.
And they looked much more comfortable at home by the end of last season. So they actually put all this work into making it feel like a fortress, and then they were like, oh, we'll just leave it for a month.
Yeah,
so,
well, I mean, exactly. I mean, that's the unfortunate thing about them taking up residence in that stadium for them. But they're going to have to, they have to come out now swinging. They've not won a game. They have to come out and say, all right,
We're winging hammers.
That team is so disjointed. There's nothing. There's nothing that works in it.
And obviously, Lanzini. I think he's injured now as well, isn't he?
Yeah. Without that, you can see they miss Lanzini. They really do. Yeah. I mean,
And the owners are hanging out Bilic to dry by saying, "Oh, he didn't want Krychowiak. Yeah. He didn't want Sanchez."
Dildo brothers living up to their names. Nick's gone. We're going to move now, unless you want to come back to that point. I think we should probably move on, shouldn't we? To the big games in Europe this weekend. In Spain, as Mo is about to tell us, it's the Catalan derby between Barcelona and Espanyol.
Speaking of dildos.
Well, here we go. I've unleashed it. This is like Pandora's box of dildos, isn't it? This is terrible. We'll stop. We might have to put the explicit tag on this podcast. But before we get on to your thoughts on it, we've had a question from Carlos Zalvador, who asks, can Barcelona's new front three reach or even surpass MSN, and how do they compare with PSG's new attack of Neymar, Mbappe and Di Maria or Cavani or however that's
going to work? The first part of the question, no. It's just no. I mean, look, you've got
Ousmane Dembele, mate. He's love class on all 5 feet.
No, I love Ousmane Dembele. I think he's amazing, but I think what you saw with MSN, which is something you won't see again, is this three, but basically three of the four, if not the three best players in the world, all playing together, all selfless, all looking out for each other. Just unreal chemistry
at their peak or close to.
Ridiculous. You won't get that again. It's not possible. Messi's going to become more of a playmaker. Suarez is going to start slowing down a bit because he's 13. He's a physical striker. Dembele's amazing. I think Barca's forward line is going to be really good once he gets keyed in. I think Suarez, if he's smart about things, will move a bit less and get a lot more tap-ins. Messi's going to love having an ambipedal player out there to pass. Who can create chances? Who can cross the ball back to him? Who can also shoot as well? But no, they can't surpass them. And MCN, the new attack in Paris, I think that's actually quite similar to MSN their first year, where you've got one, I've said this before on the transfer day deadline day podcast, the left winger is this like Messi was a right winger in 14-15. Suarez is Cavani, Suarez, Uruguayan hard-working striker, and then Mbappe is going to be the winger, but he's actually going to play a forward kind of role, appear at the final third, take chances, score goals like Neymar did in 14-15. I think it's very reminiscent, could be very fun to watch,
could be Champions League worthy. Maybe before we move on from Barcelona, I know you've got some thoughts on what's going down with the no confidence vote in the boardroom.
Well, basically Auguste Benedetto has been saying what I've finally come out and said what I've been saying for ages, is that this board is a bunch of idiots.
I like him because he's saying what I say.
Well, he's saying the truth. I mean, this board, absolutely beyond corrupt. Rossell and Bartomeu were put up for the whole tax evasion thing with Neymar signing.
He's saying that, you're not saying that. It's all allegedly.
They were put up. They were in court for this, and then they settled with the prosecutor. Basically, they did a deal where instead of going to jail, which they should have done, the club paid a €5 million fine, but the club paid the fine even though they were the ones that committed the offence. It was ridiculous, and there's no way he should be Barca president. Benedetto has to get, in the next 14 working days, he's going to get the signatures tomorrow. He has to go and get the papers tomorrow. So in the next 14 working days, he has to get 16,570 signatures, which is 15% of the member base. If he gets that, he goes to a second round of voting where then 66% of the vote of the members have to vote yes to get rid of him.
So if you're listening, just start a really good Facebook group, put loads of money behind it. Get those signatures coming in. That's how you
if they get that 66% of the votes, then Bartomeu is gone. If he get less 66%, he doesn't stay automatically, but he has a very tenuous mandate. It's just like, I can stay. Not enough people vote.
I can't see why a Barca member would not vote for this, given that Bartomeu is basically the president who might be losing you Messi.
Well, exactly. That's it.
So even the remotest chance of that, means that you just vote no to Bartomeu.
Is there any way he could pull a Trump and somehow get loads of people backing him despite him being the worst possible option?
Probably. You'll probably get some votes.
Weren't you saying that they've tried to play the whole Catalan nationalism thing?
Well, that's how this board, the original board, Sandro Rosell, that's how they got elected in the first place. And when it came to choosing between Cesc Fabregas and Thiago Alcantara to give more playing time to, they picked Cesc Fabregas and then let sold Thiago Alcantara to Bayern Munich, and now he's...
But that's not a factor now, you're saying?
No, but I'm saying that... No, I don't know if it will be that much of a factor, because it's not really... you know, there's no, the transfer window shut now, so they can't sign anyone. They can't talk about, oh, we're going to sign this Catalan player like Hector Bellerin. They really wanted him, and yeah. I think in many ways Arsenal have done Barcelona a massive favour by not selling him, because they wanted him, and they would have been the, well, bringing a Catalan back home, blah 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 blah, and not selling him. Yeah, Liverpool and Arsenal have basically done Barca fans a massive favour this summer by not selling Coutinho, not selling Bellerin, because now they've missed out on bringing the Catalan home. They've missed
You're
out on their main,
weak in the position of the ball.
Yeah, it's massive. That, I mean, that's got how you. They won election in 2015. They signed Arda Turan. They didn't need him. They signed him anyway, and that was like.
I never quite got that.
They might lose Neymar and Messi in the space of 12 months.
Yes. Exactly.
I mean, how on earth have you got a job?
Exactly.
As you said in a previous podcast, Nate, if you're Barcelona president, you've got one job.
Just keep Messi. He's the greatest player of all time. Just keep him.
Yeah.
Keep him.
I mean, if Messi comes out even remotely hints that, which is clearly obvious what he's not going to sign until they leave, but if he even comes out remotely hints at that, I mean, they're gone.
Very quickly, I'm sure we're going to do this with way more depth in a future podcast, but let's say Messi leaves. Which club would you send him to, Nick?
I think City's the obvious one.
I know
it?
It's the obvious one, but give us a more interesting one.
As in where I would like to see
yeah,
Messi.
Yeah, yeah.
Just quickly on Messi before I answer that. Like, not only the fact they're going to lose Messi, but lose him on a free. Are you kidding me?
Best player of all time. Free transfer.
Yeah, on a free transfer. Who would I like to see Messi at? I would love to see Messi playing behind... I'll tell you what I'd like to see is Lewandowski, Ribery, Robben with Messi in the hole. I would like to see that. That would please me.
Mo?
Sevilla, actually. I'd like to see him make Sevilla into a contender in La Liga.
Oh, mate.
Or Dortmund.
Yeah, Dortmund's a good shout.
Dortmund would be amazing.
Aubameyang.
Yeah. You know what, just because I really do love it when kind of people get upset in football, I can't help it. There's an element of me just like to see the piss boiling. But I'd love to see him go to Chelsea. the amount of players in like South America and Europe that have this weird affection for Chelsea.
Yeah.
And the amount of hate Chelsea get. Imagine if Messi, one of the most adored players in world football,
the Chelsea fans would be unbearable.
Oh my god. They spend so long saying, oh, Hazard's better than him, and then they get both, they'd be like, my brain is hurting.
I'll tell you what, if it even looks like he's not gonna sign a new contract, Man United are gonna throw, because they're Adidas sponsored, and he's Adidas.
That's true, yeah.
Man United will throw everything. They'll be like, Zlatan, give the attention, give it back, go away.
Yeah.
They will throw, they will show an absolute avalanche of money at him to get him to Man United.
I mean, the romantic option as well is go to Napoli and do it all again, like Maradona did. And you could actually see how he would fit
minus
into Sarri's.
You
could totally see how he fits into Sarri's
into
team.
Sarri's team, oh yeah. My God, can you imagine?
Minus the gear this time.
Yeah, well, clearly, yeah. We'll move on from that as well. So to Germany, where this weekend, I'd say the most interesting fixture off the top of my own head is Hamburg versus RB Leipzig on Friday night. Timo Werner scored 3-2 for Germany during the international break. Leipzig 1-1, lost one so far, so a little bit off the pace. It was only two games played, so it's not really a pace to get up to. Hamburg, meanwhile, won 1-1, drew 1. Time for the runners-up of last year, Leipzig, to step it up against the perennial underachievers of German football, Nick.
Potentially, I mean, when you think about it, RB Leipzig probably, even by the standards, and like everyone's like, oh, they're such a breakthrough team, they probably performed above average of what their performances actually deserved.
I don't think they were surprised by it.
when you watch them, you probably thought this is like a third or fourth place team. To see them come second and do that, lead the Bundesliga for that long, is like that's pretty extraordinary. They're definitely, it feels like they've got another gear in them. I think the whole Naby Keita situation being resolved probably helps a lot with that.
Although he's been playing pretty well, actually.
But it'll only help, and it'll probably make his teammates
stop tackling each other really hard on the training field.
Exactly.
Well, that's it. I think it's not so much that it's going to help Naby Keita. I think it'll help the rest of the team. They'll be like, okay, he's with us for the rest of the year. Let's go get this.
Yeah. 100%. Over in Italy now, and Lazio take on Milan this weekend. Both sides bristling with talent, a bit like how it used to be in the 1990s, which is quite fitting because this week marks the 25th birthday of Football Italia.
Shout out James Richardson.
Yeah, shout out AC Jimbo. Thank you for all that, and thank you for the memories.
I feel old.
Yeah.
Oh, we were doing this thing the other day, trying to find, I think it's like the best under 23 team of players in the international break. And I was going through a database thinking, oh, look for goalkeeper. Oh, he was born in 1989, same year as me. He must be young. No, I'm old now. oh, dear God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time passes.
But it should be a good match.
I'm older than Iniesta, mate.
Well, well, but you've written more articles
and
on him.
Much,
so that's true.
Much more hair.
That is true. Yeah,
that's
true.
Much more.
And you don't like a light bulb with legs. So
also true.
That's
he
also
did
true.
Win the World Cup though. So.
He did. He did. Yeah. Well, that's we haven't talked about any of the football in there, but it should be a good match. I do enjoy that. I'm sure it'll be on TV and you can watch it, and it'll be great. Moving now to France, Nice face Monaco, two of the most entertaining sides in Europe last season, to my eyes, but very much changed so far this year with injuries robbing Favre of players such as Wylan Cyprian, and obviously the uncertainty over Jean-Michel Seri's future has kind of thrown a spanner in that works. Meanwhile, Monaco have replaced most of their team that won the title last season.
Mate, Monaco,
but they've made a great go of it. Yeah. They've been beating teams 6-7-8 million nil.
Monaco are going to slap them silly.
They really are.
The thing is, you look at Monaco. What they did were very clever. Was they sold a lot of players? Yeah, but they only sold one player per position. So they sold one fullback. So Mendy went. To Sidibe.
And you already had two in both positions anyway.
They sold one centre midfielder. They sold Bakayoko. They were not countenancing bids for Fabinho. But Bernardo Silva, sure. Thomas Lemar, no.
Almost.
But also, yeah, they held that off at the end. And then up front, Falcao has stayed and Mbappe is gone. So they've managed to retain a structure of their team. I think very, very clever way to sell your players.
Falcao's back to his best again as well.
And I've said before,
huge.
People forget that
Falcao can score goals.
They can, yeah. The manager. Sorry, he's completely escaped my mind. His name is
Leonardo Jardim.
He's already recreated this team more than once before. You remember the side that held out as his counter-attack?
They're a brilliantly well-run club.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you saw Mbappe, when he left, he wrote a letter to his teammates and he thanked the president. Mm. That doesn't happen very often, does it? He was gushing about the president. So you can tell that, you know, they really, really...
they run well.
They're very well run. That's what I mean.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Another exciting match to watch in Europe. Moving now to the Championship. Fulham take on Cardiff City, the preseason favourites, against Neil Warnock's league leaders. Surprise league leaders, it's fair to say, because Cardiff have kind of performed way above what people expect to do so far.
They're coming back up, aren't they? Warnock back in the Premier
League. We'll have to see. But Fulham have definitely got designs on a promotion as well. And Millwall take on Wolves. Millwall absolutely smashing it for expected goals so far in the Championship, according to Ben Mayhew of Experimental 361, while Wolves have the glamour of Neves and co. Any other matches in the second division that catch your attention, or are those the two prime cuts?
Those are definitely the two prime cuts to keep an eye out for. Millwall have been very nice to watch so far this season.
Sorry, Millwall fans, but that's not how you're expected to be talked about, is it?
No. I mean, well, they're putting a lot of effort into what they're doing off the pitch and on the pitch at the moment, Millwall, and it very much feels like there's a great feeling around the club, which they're not necessarily has been, which isn't necessarily the fault of the fans or anyone, but of a minor section of the fans. But ever since they overturned that council decision on the major supermarket chain, effectively hampering their stadium plans, it feels like
taking away their home.
Yeah, taking away their home. It feels like, you know, there's just good news, and it's good that it's happening on the pitch as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of feel like it's a bit of a win. Not just for football, but for the whole kind of thing of the gentrification of London and all the rest of it. So there's an element of kind of...
All right, Hetty.
Yeah, I don't want to get steady. No. But there's a nice sense of, as you say, a positive buzz around them in ways that we're not used to hearing about Millwall.
Yeah, it's good to see. And I'm right with you on gentrification.
Striking one back for the lads and the ladies. Moving on now to the wrap-up, the very final end of the podcast. And we've had a couple of questions through, which we're going to wrap up the podcast with. Jasper Sarej asks, Rashford, where does he rank in the under-21 talents of the world, such as Dembele, Mbappe, Pulisic, Werner? Giggs thinks he's the new Thierry Henry.
Well, he's not as good as Mbappe or Ousmane Dembele. I would say he's probably about the same level as Timo Werner, Christian Pulisic. It's just he doesn't get to play in his position regularly, whereas they do.
He's looking pretty good out of position.
I mean, well, yeah, that's the point. Imagine if he's played up front consistently. I don't know about new Thierry.
Then he wouldn't score as much and would get really criticised.
I don't know about new Thierry Henry. I think that's
Mbappe.
It's kind of reductive. And yeah.
Well, and Martial.
First off, it's kind of reductive. And secondly, yeah, I mean, if any player in the world is the new Thierry Henry, it's Kylian Mbappe. The man looks just, I mean, he's bald, but he looks just like him other than that. It's, there's a reason he wore number 12 for France. You know, he knows where he is.
Nick, what do you reckon? He's already overcome Kelechi Iheanacho. He's got a new local rival in Ben Woodburn. He's going to have to slay in the in the ranking stakes. But what do you reckon to Marcus Rashford?
Well, I think everyone's been sort of sleeping on him because there was the...
Have they?
He's a big moments player, and then there was this whole sort of backlash of, like, well, when you actually look at how many games he's played and blah. But he's so impressive. Mm. I mean, he's so quick.
That goal.
The goal was fantastic. Ooh. It bounced before the goal line. He put that much dip on it. But also he's 19 years old, to come back from that what happened in the first half and be like, right, I'm taking over, go to the left wing, you know. I mean, what I'm most impressed with him is the fact that he has been shipped out on the wing and he's making the most of the situation.
Yeah.
You know, there's not many young players who do that. And he's contributing immensely. I think he still has a long way to go. The other good thing about him is that he's still got to fill out a bit.
Yeah.
He's only 19.
And he really has his summer as well. You can tell he's hitting the gym. And
he's a tall guy. Yeah. So he could end up being probably about Martial's frame and with maybe a couple of inches bonus on him. So,
well, I mean, this is fanciful stuff, obviously, but I've seen some United fans saying, they're not saying he's going to be as good as him, but they see similarities to Ronaldo in the sense of wanting to build himself up, this self-determined, self-driven, self-made player. Because, he's clearly got a talent for positional sense and stuff, but he's also clearly a player made on the training field as much as anything else.
Yeah, he works hard.
Yeah, he's got the lot. It's just a question of how it develops from here. I think the other players on this list, he might have the same talent ceiling as Dembele and Mbappe. I think it's about seeing how he develops from here.
So. I mean, and you have to look at those two aren't managed by Jose Mourinho, you know. So the fact that he's getting any minutes at all as a teenager under Mourinho is frankly... Yeah.
Speaks volumes.
It's a testament to how good he actually is.
Shout out to Luke Shaw.
Yeah, I mean, the only hope is that he doesn't go
screaming out to Luke Shaw.
I mean, you look at the last two teenagers that played regularly under... Well, two of the last three teenagers, there's Varane, obviously Varane did very well, but look at the other two, Davide Santon and Mario Balotelli. You'd have to hope that Rashford,
Geordie legend, Davide Santon.
Rashford is more Varane and less those two, you know. Because like Nick says, his ceiling is amazing, but right now he's a step behind those two guys.
Although in terms of talent and ability, Balotelli was up there as well.
But
what I'm saying is, the difference is, Rashford, all you ever hear about him is his attitude is on point, he's switched on, he's got it all together.
Just like Europa.
Exactly. last question. True Blue asks, how scary are Real Madrid and which Premier League club in the Champions League this season could give them serious problems?
They're very scary. And I mean, if Man United hold on and pray a little bit, maybe them. I don't know. They're way above pretty much everyone right now. Yeah. I mean, if Dembele settles in immediately, Barca could maybe, you know, give them a run, and Bayern could give them a run definitely right now as it is. But other than those two sides,
they're not Premier League teams.
this is what I'm saying. I mean, United did a pretty decent job in the UEFA Super Cup. I mean, but it was very much a sort of like, hold on, oh God, what's going on? Mm. Sort of, you know, so. United are the only team I can see doing it, just because Mourinho's focus on stopping them would actually help stop them, whereas, you know, other teams would try and play them and I think they'd just get diced. They're not ready yet.
They get slashed and diced.
If City draw them maybe later in the, like, quarterfinals, semifinals, maybe they could do it if they've gotten their stuff together by then, but right now as it is, only United, and even then, maybe not.
To me, on paper, if they transfer their best Premier League form, I think Chelsea and Spurs could give them a go. Maybe not beat them, maybe not destroy them or anything. What do you reckon, Nick?
No. I don't see any team in the Premier League causing Real Madrid problems, because they can't, man for man, they're completely outgunned across the pitch.
Yeah.
The only thing I can see is
Harry Kane hat-trick at the Bernabeu.
Spurs works on paper, but like they're crumbling under the pressure.
It's also like Real Madrid, like a superior version of Spurs in so many ways. The only thing I can imagine is if there's a particular mismatch. One thing I can see is maybe Man City causing Marcelo problems on the right flank with a combination of Jesus and Bernardo Silva.
Problems, and he goes, Marcelo.
Marcelo out of position. But then Toni Kroos is so good at covering. I mean, that's the thing with the Real Madrid squad. There's no weaknesses. So
they're just all really good footballers.
They're all really good. So you have to hope for some luck or for them not to turn up.
The main weakness they have is that there's space between their midfield and the defence, because Casemiro doesn't track space very well.
Scores a goal and you go,
That's the problem. You have to be... That's what I'm saying. If City get their stuff together, they'll be confident enough to play around Madrid's press and then they could exploit the space. But unless they get their stuff together, they can't do that.
And even if you do get your stuff together, might get stuffed.
City, De Bruyne versus Casemiro and Bernardo Silva versus Marcelo could cause them problems, but then you look at the other end of the pitch.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way John Stones and Otamendi is stopping Cristiano Ronaldo and Asensio.
It's just not happening. Just not happening.
Like, United, if they put two banks of four, Matic should play another blinder.
Full Mourinho.
Mourinho doesn't play Lingard this time. He plays Rashford and Martial on the left. Sticks to his game plan a little bit. Yeah, United could maybe do it. No one else. Mm.
Yeah, well, on that positive note, that's the end of the podcast. Nick, thanks for joining us.
No worries. It's been a pleasure.
It has. It always is. And Mo, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Greg, for having me. It's been great.
Yeah. Just out of those games we touched on, which ones are you looking most forward to watching this weekend?
City Liverpool, I think. It's going to be a doozy.
City Liverpool, but I will be keeping a very close eye on Nice Monaco. Mm. I'll take that much.
You definitely should. There'll definitely be goals. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. Do check out Defending in Numbers over on iTunes, on Deezer, on everywhere. It's everywhere you can find a podcast. It's on there. It's a Deezer original show created by the makers of the Squawker Talker. That's us. And yeah, check it out. It's wonderful. You'll love it. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for your time and see you again soon.